It's showtime.
Bob Kincaid, 3 hours of conversation cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go. We are off and running for this, the 28th day of September, 2017. September is almost a done deal. This is the Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is where we live. That's where you go if you'd like to jump into the Madcap Mary Zany Wacky real-time multimedia extravaganza that is the Horn chat room. Folks are waiting for you. Just pick out your free screen name and free password. Everything at the Horn is free. And you will be immediately greeted by Jug of Punch and Silent R. Lamar and Squeaky. And a minute ago, you would have been greeted by Anatole as well. Anatole's usually there. Anatole will be around a little bit. So, all capably moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator, Sparky, who, being a spacing guild master, has folded space on a lovely Northern California afternoon to become Man Cave. Yes. So more will be arriving as the program continues. We don't have a tardy bell or anything here. The only bell we've got here is a cowbell. Yes. And we always need more cowbell. There's Jug of Punch. There's Anatole. I know these things. Yes. This is, of course, a listener-supported program. There are no massive corporate sponsors. No one to self-censor, cause anyone to self-censor on the program for fear of offending, you know, a shoe company or a company that manufactures whipped creams and floor topping, dessert toppings and floor wax, floor polishes, what have you. No, just listener support. And thanks go out this evening to the merry little band of supporters of the program. Thanks in particular to our subscribers. Sharon, thank you, Sharon, in Ohio. Thank you very kindly to Randy in PA. And thank you very kindly to Philip in Texas. And thanks to David in Florida. Thank you very kindly. Also, thank you to Peg in the sandbox, who provided tremendous help overnight so that the fundraising hole wouldn't be quite as horrifying as it was getting to be. So, doing a little bit of quick ciphering. Let's see. Where were we? So, that would have been... I've done away with the sense there. It is driving me crazy. Two and two is four, carry 12, add the five, divide by the number of Grateful Dead drummers. So we've got a fundraising goal this evening of somewhere around $430. We knocked out a big, humongous chunk of it. Thank you very kindly to to all those that I mentioned. Remember, if you'd like to become one of the subscribers, then just go to headonradionetwork.com, click on chat room. Or no, don't click on chat room. There's nothing to... Well, I mean, click on chat room if you want to. What do I care? No, click on contribute. Check the little box that says make this a recurring monthly donation, and you'll be part of the subscription process. If that doesn't work for you and you don't like PayPal, you can always do the subscription thing by going to patreon.com, patreon.com/Bob Kincaid, and doing it that way. Either way, if you subscribe $10 a month, what you're contributing is roughly somewhere between 15 and 16 cents per hour of programming, which ain't a lot. It's not a lot at all to make sure that everybody who wants to hear this program, who wants to participate in this program, can do so. Right? Because this isn't, there's no pay to play here. None whatsoever. All right, so there's all of that. Now, of course, I need to tell you about our latest sponsor. Have you tried peripatetic pomegranate from Horn Labs? Peripatetic pomegranate is the newest product from Horn Labs. You know, I've never much cared for pomegranates. And to this day, peripatetic pomegranate is the only way that I can get as much pomegranate goodness as I need in my diet on a daily basis. Yes, 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 sure, there's pomegranate juice out there, but that stuff is sour and bitter. And then there's the problem of the seeds. I mean, mythology gives us a pretty serious warning about what comes of eating pomegranate seeds. So, now, I'm not going to take the risk. I'm just not going to. So, consequently, what I rely on is peripatetic pomegranate, new, from Horn Labs. For only $29.95 a month, you can get a month's supply of peripatetic pomegranate. And, of course, if you want a two-month supply, for only a dime more, a total of $60, you can have a two-month supply of peripatetic pomegranate from the dedicated nutritional scientists at Horn Labs. Peripatetic pomegranate, try yours today, and you'll feel an instantaneous burst of peripatetic purple passion. Dare I say it, right? Yeah. So peripatetic pomegranate to start your day the Horn Labs way. Yes, yes indeed. Enjoy it, especially because it doesn't exist. Like all other nutritional supplements offered on, particularly offered on right-wing radio broadcasts, and pseudo-libertarian broadcasts, and it, whatever, what have you. It doesn't do a damn thing, because it's mostly almost 99.9% bullshit. Well, it takes a little longer, Brother Deacon Asa. Screw your peripatetic palm. I'm homebound. Besides, I haven't received my order of pungent potatoes from 2 weeks ago. Well, Brother Deacon Asa, it takes a little while longer for us to get it across the border to you. It's not my fault you live in communist Canada. Mm-hmm. So there we have it. That's the beginning of this Thorn in the Side Thursday. And I wanted to start with something that looks sort of fun. It was a couple of nights ago when I was doing the upload for the. That's right, Sparky. Sparky says, "I know not to send you any pomegranates now, Bob Kincaid." Well, he said they're almost ripe now, and I guess that would be about ripe, because they only show up in the grocery stores here in the fall of the year, just like the pumpkins. just like Perky Pumpkins, which you could have from yesterday. Well, Arthur, I mean, you know, we bought a mop and stuff. Arthur says, hey, I thought they had closed down Horn Labs after that huge listeria outbreak. It wasn't listeria, it was hysteria. There was a hysteria outbreak at Horn Labs that was occasioned by the near loss of the West Virginia University Mountaineers to the Kansas Jayhawks last week. Many beers were spilled, but like I said, we went out and bought a mop, and everything is groovy at Horn Labs once again. Okay? Thorn in the Side Thursday. And a couple of nights ago, as I was doing all the stuff that I do to upload the program after the program is over, upload the podcast and whatnot, I opened a browser. I have to do that, you see, because the podcast is available not only at iTunes and not only via the XML feed at whiterosesociety.org, but it's also available at podbean.com, P-O-D-B-E-A-N, podbean.com. Laborman wants to know, will peripatetic pomegranate help my boner bust out of my pants? Well, Laborman, in a word, yes. Have you ever seen a pomegranate? That should answer your question. Peripatetic pomegranate from Horn Labs. And so when I open the browser, there's always a little bit of the latest news carrying on, whatnot. And this was the day, a couple of days ago, that Bob Corker announced that he was no longer interested remaining the junior senator from the state of Tennessee. So that means that in 2018, there will be a mad scrum and the more I read, it looks like there's going to be a lot of entrants to be the Republican nominee for Senate. And, of course, in our current political climate, it is a foregone conclusion, just like it is in Alabama, but we dealt with that last night, that the Republican will win that seat. It is less of a foregone conclusion, perhaps, than it would have been had Corker decided to run again. But that's kind of old news, all of that. And it not directly impacting it, almost immediately, everybody started guessing about who would run. Over on Twitter, I saw somebody saying, hey, Justin Timberlake's from Tennessee. Maybe Justin would like to be a senator. Okay, I don't think he's a Republican. I'm guessing he's not a Republican. But over on the Republican side, the first name that popped up, I probably ought not say popped up in this context. But the first name that I saw mentioned that evening as I was uploading the program was that of a proud son of the University of Tennessee, Peyton Manning, son of Archie, brother of Eli. And okay, whatever. But it was the context in which I saw that mention. And the context of that mention was that to mention Peyton Manning's name was one Scott Desjarlais. Now, Scott Desjarlais is a member of the House of Representatives. And since this is Thorn in the Side Thursday, this has to do with not with Peyton Manning or not even with Bob Corker's seat, but with Scott Desjarlais. Scott Desjarlais told Business Insider, Peyton's a great guy and a popular guy. He may be looking more at running for the Senate if Lamar Alexander decides not to run again. Mm-hmm. Now, what makes Scott Desjarlais have any more expertise on whether or not Peyton Manning will run is anybody's guess. But this is, any opportunity to discuss Scott Desjarlais is always a good opportunity. Because Representative Scott Desjarlais is actually in the Congress of the United States. He was sent to the Congress of the United States by the voters of his district there in Tennessee. Because, of course, being a Republican, he has Republican family values. Mm-hmm. Except when he doesn't. It was back in 2015 when the Republicans, as a means of keeping their mouth-walking, knuckle-breathing base good and ginned up, that Scott Desjarlais jumped in and voted alongside 242 members of the House of Representatives for a 20-week abortion ban, also referred to sometimes in the same breath as a heartbeat bill. The idea that when there's a heartbeat, the baby gets constitutional rights, or the fetus, the blastocysts, the zygote, whatever the hell it is, it gets everything short of a vote. Of course, after it's born, it has to wait until it's 18 to get a vote and 21 to be able to drink a beer. But, you know, there in the womb, it's got constitutional rights. Mm-hmm. Scott Desjarlais, he was right worried about the precious little fetuses. Yes. And he was so concerned that he voted to make sure, he voted to try to limit women's access to reproductive health care. Mm-hmm. The problem, though, was that a few years before that, in 2012, lots of interesting information began to slip out about the conduct of Scott Desjarlais, who is apparently deemed to be an expert on who's going to run for or not run for Senate from the great state of Tennessee. See, Scott Desjarlais has himself some Republican family values, as previously noted. It means that he lets God and Jesus, little baby Jesus, direct the footsteps of his life and his Christ-centered, this is not prayer meeting Wednesday, but his Christ-centered family life. Mm-hmm. Now, contrary to what Yeshua, the brown-skinned Palestinian day laborer, was absolutely unequivocal about, Scott Desjarlais, and look, I don't care, okay, because I don't think a 2,000-year-old avatar should make public policy, or the pronouncements of said 2,000-year-old avatar should make public policy for a modern nation state, but that's me, and, you know, I'm all liberal and stuff. Okay. Well, Scott Desjarlais feels otherwise. But back when he was involved in a traditional family values merge, apparently was not having traditional family values sexy time sufficiently to keep him in his own marriage bed. And so consequently, Scott Desjarlais went out what we refer to here in the hills as a rompin'. He wound up getting a non-traditional family values divorce, contrary to the preachments of his Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ. And it was in the context of that most secular and sinful divorce that he had counseled and permitted, because, of course, as a Christian family values husband, he was the head of the household, and the wife had to submit to his will the way that the church submits to Christ. It's right there in the book. He made his wife get two abortions while he was in his adulterous Christian family values traditional marriage. And, like I said, he also went romping about outside of his traditional family values Christian marriage. And one 24-year-old woman said, well, I'm pregnant, Scott. To which he said, well, abort it! Mm-hmm. In a recorded phone conversation, he said, you told me what you'd have an abortion, and now we're getting too far along without one. If we need to go to Atlanta or whatever to get this solved and get it over with so we can get on with our lives, then let's do it. Doesn't sound like he had much regard for that precious little fetus, does it? What I find interesting, though, is that line about if we need to go to Atlanta. Because, you know, down there in that sinful city, Hotlanta, yeah, you can probably get you an abortion at a drive-thru. Because they're very sinful down there in Atlanta. Right? Now, why they didn't go to a women's health clinic in Tennessee? I don't know. Then again, relative to his congressional district, maybe there weren't one because of the actions of other Scott Desjarlais, both in the at the state and federal level. So I just I saw his name in that article, and I went, wait a minute, rings a bell. And there it is, yeah. Also, you know, the question was raised and he refused to answer about whether or not any of those several abortions were conducted beyond the 20-week mark. Right. Do you go to Atlanta just because maybe folks won't see you walking into the into the clinic there? Is it kind of like deacons at the back door of the liquor store and the front door of the Baptist church? Yeah. He comes from Jasper, Tennessee. Scott Desjarlais does. And like I said, I'm guessing there's no women's health clinic there. So yeah, down to Atlanta. And, you know, besides, Atlanta's a hell of a lot more fun than Jasper. And you go down there and have abortion and maybe go out to a nice restaurant, maybe go dancing. Dancing, that's another thing Jesus don't approve of. But, you know, at Hotlanta, that's... Atlanta is a permutation of an ancient Greek term that means
Sodom on the Chattahoochee.
Yes. So I just thought that would be a good starting place for Thorn in the Side Thursday. Okay. That, but what else? Well, there's a couple of things that come to mind. You know how Dr. Tom Price, who heads the Department of Health and Human Services, and recently got busted for things like a chartered round-trip flight from Washington, D.C. to Philadelphia that cost the taxpayers $25,000 when he could have easily taken either the train or a limousine or, in fact, could have flown, commercial airlines like the law presumes that he will. Yeah, well, there's been a bit of a stink about it, and as he was walking toward a helicopter or something, someone asked Dolt 45 what he thought about it, and he had this sort of faraway look that we last saw when Ronald Reagan was in office, like he didn't really understand the question. And he, right. But they sort of prompted him and gave him a little help. Are you mad about Tom Price? Very mad. Very angry. And I'm looking into it. Well, are you going to fire him? We'll see. And sort of doddered on, the dotard doddered onto, the helicopter or wherever the hell he was going. He probably didn't know any more than I did. It was all a big secret being kept from him by the spirochetes. Well, Tom Price, having been busted, it's not like anybody took him away in irons. God knows someone probably should, but no one did. Today he announced that he will pay back some. Just some. Not a lot, just some of the hundreds of thousands of taxpayer dollars that he frittered away on those private chartered flights. But from now on, he will fly commercial, he promised. And nobody could tell whether he had his fingers crossed behind his back. He's been the secretary of DHHS since May, of this year. Let's see, May. That's month number 5. We are presently at the end of month number 9. So that's 4 months. In the 4 months that Tom Price, Dr. Tom Price, probably couldn't put a Band-Aid on without killing somebody. Dr. Tom Price has flown around, has taken 26 flights between May and now. 26 times. And every one of those 26 times, he has done so by a private chartered flight. The cost is measured in the hundreds of thousands of dollars. And up until now, he has not reimbursed a penny. Issuing a statement, he said, and of course he was from Georgia Stan. Despite this, I regret the concerns this has raised regarding the use of taxpayer dollars. Today, I will write a personal check to the U.S. Treasury for the expenses of my travel on private charter planes. The taxpayers won't pay a dime for my seat on those planes. And the number that was calculated for Price to write that check for was $51,887.31. Now, here's the fun part. The taxpayers won't pay a dime for my use. That's what he said, isn't it? Taxpayers won't pay a dime for my seat on those planes. Well, maybe not for the seat, but the wheels, the pilot, the co-pilot, the navigator, the flight attendant, the wings, the engine, the ailerons, the flaps. Maybe they're the same thing. I don't know. The radar thingamajig, Bob. What's in it? Yeah, we're paying for those. Yeah, damn sure. Because that check for $51,887.31, that's a wee itsy bitsy kind of tiny little fraction, like an eighth of the more than $400,000, maybe not quite up to $500,000 that Tom Price actually cost us. Remember, Tom Price is the guy who, from an executive branch standpoint, was ever so eager to see a few tens of millions of people done out of their health insurance. He's one of those goobers who, while he was still in the wild-eyed, frothing-at-the-mouth, rabid right-wing Freedom Caucus Trumpanzee teabagging portion of the House, which means the entire Republican Party, who voted probably more times than he went to the bathroom in a one-week span. He voted more to repeal and replace that communist Kenyan Muslim Obamacare, which is destroying America by letting people go to the doctor. Yeah. So $51,000, and we're just all going to call it square. Because there's really nobody to hold his feet to the fire. Mm-mm. So sort of watch this space. The bullshit excuses, the bullshit excuse machine has already been fired up and it's banging on all eight. I have spent 40 years both as a doctor and in public service putting people first. It has been my personal honor to serve the American people, and I look forward to continuing that service. Well, then, yeah, you've served the American people, Dr. Tom. You've served them up on a silver platter, and you have feasted heartily upon them at the table. Mm-hmm. Your ciphering's not so good there, Brother Deacon Asa. I think I just out-ciphered somebody. Brother Deacon Asa said he will pay back for exactly a quarter of the money what he stole for those private flights. You do your gazintas again. I'm pretty sure that's not 25%. It's more like 12.5%, which is an eighth. Mm-hmm. Huh. I'm so glad we have such dedicated public servants. Aren't you? Well, and then that was where I was going next. Jug a punch with a question from the chat room. But Bob, what about the hurricane evacuees that have to sign a promissory note to pay for their evacuation? What about them indeed? Because that's a fact. It was reported today. Well, the original report, courtesy of MarketWatch, pointed out the fact that a billionaire and a celebrity, a pop star, have both donated the use of their planes for delivery of supplies and evacuations and such needs as are such things as are needed in the relief of Puerto Rico, which, for any little maggots listening, is an actual territory of the United States and not a foreign country. And I don't have to tell the Horn Family Community Congregation that, but you do have to tell the maggots, because they still don't know. The maggots think Puerto Rico's probably going to be affected and, you know, kept from coming into America by that big, beautiful wall that Kaiser Kumquat's going to build, the solar wall, the ones with the big windows in it, so we can see the drug dealers that are throwing the 60-pound bales of drugs over the wall and otherwise might hit unsuspecting people on the noggin. You know, those are all true things that he said. Yes, that's not me making, that's not me being cute. He said those things. And so, the U.S. Department of State's Bureau of Consular Affairs had the following. Anyone evacuated on U.S. government-coordinated transport, including charter and military flights, must sign an evacuee manifest and promissory note form. That would be your DS-5528 note prior to departure. The promissory note obligates an evacuated person to repay the cost of transportation to the U.S. government. And there's nothing there in your DS-5528 about just paying back an eighth of the cost. In fact, there are express statements about exactly how much you do pay back. Now, this applies, bear in mind, this doesn't apply for evacuation from Puerto Rico, because Puerto Rico is not a foreign country. It's a pity I have to keep reiterating that, not to you, but just in case there are any little maggots out there listening. But if, say, you were evacuated by the U.S. government from Dominica or from the British Virgin Islands as opposed to the U.S. Virgin Islands, or if you were evacuated from flattened Barbuda, well, then the government is going to demand that you reimburse to the tune of the standard one-way economy fare at full price. Mm-hmm. Even and that's not, you know, full price, like if you went onto one of the bookings, the flight booking sites where you can get it for less money. It's whatever the federal government says the full price was. And here's the fun part. In signing that promissory note, the government gets to hold your passport hostage until you're square. Yeah, there's the language. Upon evacuation, a Department of State official must limit an evacuee's passport. In order to obtain a new passport, an evacuee must arrange payment as agreed upon via the promissory note. So MarketWatch reached out to the Secretary of State's office, Rexon Tillerson, and the Secretary of State's office said, if an evacuee has urgent travel but has had his or her passport limited, Secretary of State Rex Tillerson's Department of State suggest immediately contacting the government to set up a plan to allow for a replacement passport. Unfortunately, loan repayments cannot currently be completed because of ongoing emergencies in the region. Some catch that catch 22. Dr. Nika was right. Meanwhile, Ron and Raleigh points out, Tom Price can't be bothered to rub shoulders with the hoi polloi. I understand the final accounting's around $400,000. It is. It absolutely is. Meanwhile, however, the Department of State, having been caught up in all of this, went, wait a minute, this ain't us. This ain't us. Puerto Rico ain't no foreign country. That via Ashley Garrigus, who is a press officer at the State Department's Bureau of Consular Affairs, who is probably the last one there with a job, considering what's been done to the Department of State. The Department of State is not facilitating evacuations from Puerto Rico, as it is a U.S. territory. She's probably had to say that a lot, what with Trumpansies calling and such, wanting to make sure that there weren't any illegal aliens from Puerto Rico coming to America. No. Ashley Garrigus sent folks on over to the Department of Defense. So it's kind of a watch this space sort of thing. But it's true, Mark Cuban, who does not mince words. I mean, what you think of any given billionaire is entirely up to you. Mark Cuban is said to be kind of a libertarian kind of guy, but he also has a horrible, horrible, terrible character flaw insofar as he actually thought that Hillary Clinton would be a better president than Donald Trump. So there's that. I mean, that's a whole lot of ideological impurity going on there. But he handed the keys to the jet to one of the Dallas Mavericks players, basketball players, for the purpose of delivering supplies to Puerto Rico. And then there's this person by the name of Pitbull, whom I have no idea who he is, because I'm a geezer. Described in the Market Watch article as a self-proclaimed entertainer. Well, if you're self-proclaimed, aren't all entertainers self-proclaimed? The question isn't in the proclamation. The question is in the entertaining. So that's more of a language thing, but I think I understand. And an entrepreneur, also known as Mr. Worldwide, also known as another person I've never heard of because geezer. Now he's got a plane. And he sent his plane to Puerto Rico. He sent his plane to Puerto Rico expressly for the purpose of picking up cancer patients who desperately needed chemotherapy and were not able to get it, and had them flown to somewhere that they could pursue appropriate medical care. Speaking of medical care, I'm not really a big one for celebrity news, but there is this has some relevance. Julia Louis-Dreyfus came to national prominence and attention playing Elaine on Seinfeld, and then after that wrapped up, she got an even what turned out to be an even more, even bigger, arguably more popular gig, playing the Vice President of the United States, Selena Myers, in HBO's Veep. Well, she announced today that she has been diagnosed with breast cancer. And like any human being who has been diagnosed with breast cancer who isn't a member of the Trump family, I send out, and I'm sure on behalf of the Horn Family Community Congregation, I send out our best wishes for her complete recovery and remission from that awful goddamn disease. You know, when you get a little bit older, you start thinking about the things that you thought you knew when you were a little kid. And I guess my parents were pretty damn good at what they did, because when my mother was diagnosed with breast cancer back when I was a 9-year-old, I really didn't, I didn't understand, and they didn't tell me how grave it was. I just knew that my beloved grandmother suddenly found a pretty darn good reason to close up shop up here and headed down south to Alabama and took up residence in the other bedroom while my mother went to the hospital. And you can look up what the survival rates are for actual malignant breast cancer in 1972, and they're not good. And but my mother had a competent surgeon, and he carved her right breast right down to the bone. He took all the muscle, he took all the lymph, he took all the fat, he took all the everything. And then, and he took the lymph all the way from under her right arm. And then he had her absolutely bombarded with intense, blistering doses of cobalt radiation. But she survived. She survived to see her little boy grow up. She survived to take care of her mother when she went into her dotage. She survived. And so when I see a story about someone being being diagnosed with breast cancer, I don't look at celebrity status. All I do is hope that they, like my mother, survive. With the caveat, of course, that they're not a member of the Trump family, because I'm vicious that way. If I heard that Melanoma or Ivanka or Udi or Cootie's wife had breast cancer, I'd be like, don't give a shit. Come on, cancer. But that's me. Sorry, I can't always manifest all that Buddhist goodness. Okay, thank you, Jeremy in Vermont, letting me know Pitbull is a Latino rap artist. All right, good, that helps. Maybe I'll go and find some Pitbull music to listen to at some point, because he's done a very, very good thing. But in the course of announcing that she has breast cancer, Julia Louis-Dreyfus also issued a statement. She said, "The good news is that I have the most glorious group of supportive and caring family and friends and fantastic insurance through my union." The bad news is that not all women are so lucky. So let's fight all cancers and make universal health care a reality. It's kind of impressive, isn't it? She began her note saying that 1 in 8 women get breast cancer. Today, I'm the one. So I hope she has, like I said, a complete recovery and remission, and can go on to continue to ply her craft and make other people's lives good via being entertained. And good for her for thinking of other people. So that's what so Pitbull did the right thing. United Airlines is providing a 777 jetliner, making daily runs to Puerto Rico. In a press release from Chicago, where United is headquartered, it was reported that United loaded one of the largest planes in its fleet with more than 75,000 pounds of items like food, water, diapers, rope, tarpaulins, and nearly 50 power generators. The 777 is making the return flight to O'Hare this evening with more than 300 evacuees. United has allotted one flight a day to San Juan and plans to repeat the same relief operation again tomorrow. In the wake of devastating impacts of Hurricane Maria in Puerto Rico and the earthquake in Mexico, Mayor Rahm Emanuel is encouraging residents to support the recovery and relief work by donating to reputable organizations assisting with efforts. On the other hand, of course, there was the Tangerine Tiberius. Texas and Florida are doing great, but Puerto Rico, which was already suffering from broken infrastructure and massive debt, is in deep trouble. Why do you even mention the debt? He reminds me of that fire department in Tennessee from years back, who, when called to put out the fire at one of their neighbor's houses, said, "No, didn't pay your fire service bill, bub. Watch her burn, boys. Make sure it don't get to anybody's house that actually paid for their fire service. Yours gonna burn down. Uh-huh. Too bad about your debt. Too bad about your house." You know, that's the kind of guy that Donald Trump is. "Oh, it's terrible that, like, people are going without water and going without medicine and going without food. What a damn shame you're all in such debt. Fuck you." Yeah, people did, along the way, folks began to count the number of tweets that Marcus Aurelius had sent out. Since the date of Maria's landfall, September the 20th, through yesterday afternoon, the Clementine Caligula had put out 96 tweets. Out of those 96 tweets, seven of them, were about Puerto Rico, and that includes the ones about how its old electrical grid, which was in terrible shape, was devastated. Much of the island was destroyed, with billions of dollars owed to Wall Street and the banks, which sadly must be dealt with. Food, water, and medical care are top priorities, and doing well. Well, no, they're not doing well. The fact of the matter is, there is was unfolding while the Trump administration was ignoring it. Humanitarian, not crisis, but disaster. And I said, I said that we needed a Berlin airlift style response. And maybe I'm just such a geezer that people don't know exactly what the Berlin airlift was. But it remains to this day a tour de force of logistical management and delivery of essential supplies for the perpetuation of human life. And we're still not doing it. And if, in fact, and granted, there were more countries than just the United States involved in the Berlin airlift, but if, in fact, our $1 trillion a year United States military cannot pull off a Berlin airlift-style response to disaster, then that's really kind of pathetic. Because while I respect and praise the work the volunteer work of people like Mark Cuban and people like Pitbull and, yes, United Airlines. The military of this country is a volunteer military. And the military of this country is the single most socialist organization we have. It is entirely publicly funded. And in fact, some of those public funds are given away to outfits like Blackwater, or Z, or Zoo, or New, or whatever they're calling it these days. We give away lots of public funds. We spend our public funds developing stupid airplanes. Right? Some of the finest paperweights in the world are to be found in the Joint Strike Fighter. Those things will hold down entire... frankly, they're big and they're... And they'll hold down just about the output of an entire paper mill. But we have, yes, we have a military whose purpose is to destroy things and kill people. I understand that's the purpose of the military, but it is also a matter of national defense to protect the territorial integrity of our country. And we have enough C-130s and whatever that other great goddamn big jet-powered transport plane we have. We got enough of those to have them rolling in. And as I said, we've got enough we've got enough construction battalions. We've got enough engineers that we could be building temporary runways. In fact, back when this country was actually great at stuff, we did that shit all the time. We built airstrips throughout the South Pacific in the Second World War. We built dock facilities, and we did it with people shooting at the people doing the building. But in 2017, I suppose we can't. Because so much of America now is we can't. And that's pathetic. Truly pitiable. Mango Mussolini tweeted earlier about how things are going so well in Puerto Rico. Yes, we're sending lots of generators and power is coming back. Bullshit. Last number I saw earlier today was something on the order of 97% of the island is still without electricity. I don't know if the USNS Comfort has arrived there yet. But it only took the Trump administration a full week after Hillary Clinton had suggested that it really needed to be underway and on the way. Yeah, it only took them a week to go, oh, we've got one of those? Mm-hmm. We got one of those. Jesus. And so, no, just to clear things up, evacuees from Puerto Rico don't have to sign the promissory notes, but evacuees from other Caribbean islands do. And I guess that's it's a little bit of a blessing. If blessing is the right word. According to the State Department, some of the promissory notes were waived as a result of medical emergencies. And here's a question. Since these are socialist operations, why are there bills? Here's another question. Are the people of Puerto Rico, are they going to get a bill at some point in the future for all of this? And since Marcus Aurelius decided to bring the issue up, yeah, what about those Wall Street banks and those hedge funds? Because hedge funds own a shit ton of the debt of Puerto Rico. Are they going to have to take a patriotic haircut? Are they going to have to eat those losses? They damn well should. Don't know. Don't know. So that's where... that's where we find ourselves as the filibobster comes to a close. Also, thank you very kindly for a brand new subscription that I neglected to mention from Charlene. Thank you, Charlene, so very, very much for an end of the, and so that's a big part of why we're not in quite such a hellacious hole as we were in. Thank you, Charlene. By the way, in regard to expensive paperweights, Brother Deacon Asa points out, all you got to do is visit any of the larger airplane graveyards in the Southwest. There are literally hundreds of brand new fighter jet planes that have never flown other than to fly to the graveyard, sitting there and wasting away under the southwestern sun. That would be something to see. There's a scene in the Academy Award-winning film of the post-World War II era called The Best Years of Our Lives, which is really a film worth seeing. There's a scene where a pilot who has returned home goes to one of those aircraft graveyards. And there are B-17s all over the place, and fighter aircraft and whatnot. And it's moving, to say the very least. It is moving. So that's pretty much it for the hour. I will note that in the ongoing effort to knock down this deficit, we started out at the same number we're at right now, zero, during the program. So hopefully that will change. Remember, either PayPal or Patreon.com if you want to do the subscription way thingy. And of course the program note that I will be gone next week. I'll be gone to D.C. doing work regarding the AIC Act and the Stalinist suppression of science that was done to the review of the health science peer-reviewed reports relative to mountaintop removal and the communities in wherein it takes place. And, you know, frankly, it's one of those things that has to be done, as I explained to one listener via email earlier. Nobody else is doing this work. If the AIC campaign doesn't do it, it doesn't get done. And we know this much. People are being poisoned and people are being killed in the sacrifice zone of Appalachia. And we know that even if the odds are long against complete success in what we're trying to do, we know one thing. As long as we're doing it,
we've got a chance. If we don't do it, there is no chance. So that's where that is. Okay. Yeah, the C-5 was what I was thinking of. All the aircraft buffs. Yeah, Marty says, which goddamn big jet-powered plane are you referring to, the C-17 or its even larger predecessor, the C-5? I'm pretty sure I was thinking of the C-5. I take it it's out of service. Well, of course it is. It's the way things go. Anyway, let's take a break, and thanks to Ron and Raleigh, and thanks to Kelly, I now get to find out what Pitbull is all about. So we'll do that by means of the break, and of course, this being a Thursday, we've got the Green News Report with Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen coming up, which I always look forward to. So this is listener-supported conversation radio. And don't forget to try Peripatetic Pomegranate from Horn Labs. Peripatetic Pomegranate, when you want to put a little peripatesis, or maybe a half a pair of peripatesis in your stride. Peripatetic Pomegranate, your best way to get pomegranate goodness every day, only from Horn Labs. I am Bob Kincaid, and by Jove, we'll be back.
No BJZ, no cash. City, no Biggie, Fat Joe, no pun. Little John, no crump. DMC, no run. Easy, no coke. Cat Williams, no joke. MC Hammer, still rich, now broke.
Yeah.
Just imagine all this baby enough to make it go crazy.
Latinas, they get crazy.
Latitas,
they get crazy.
No cash, for Atlanta, no scores.
Yeah.
Britney with no drama, Alicia with no karma, New York with no flavor, the world with
that's
no haters.
Crazy.
Obama with no color, Hillary with no deal. Pitt with no Miami, and soon with
that's
no skills.
Uh-huh.
Just imagine all this baby, it's enough to make it go crazy.
Woo! Latinas, they get crazy. Latitas, they get crazy. Latitas, they get crazy. Yo mama, she gets crazy. Latinas, they get crazy.
Hey, let's go, hey.
In Trinity, they get crazy. In Jamaica, they get crazy. In Australia, they get crazy. In Japan, they get crazy.
Let's go.
It's Thursday, September 28, 2017.
3.5 million Americans are on the brink, or in some cases in the midst of a humanitarian crisis that does not seem to be getting better.
Puerto Rico descends into desperation after Hurricane Maria.
The red tape has to be ripped off
as if it was a Band-Aid.
Trump administration finally grants waiver on shipping restrictions to the island of 3.5 million U.S. citizens. Plus, some small bits of good news amid all the bad.
We'll take whatever we can get. All of those stories and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
As far as Puerto Rico is concerned, we have had tremendous reviews. We're doing a great job. Everybody has said it's amazing the job that we've done. So I think we've done a really good job. We are going to do far more than anybody else would ever be able to do.
Yep, heck of a job, Trumpy. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, I know Donald Trump is doing a fantastic job down in Puerto Rico. He's told me so himself over and over again. But what's the real story now, more than a week after Hurricane Maria?
Well, unfortunately, Puerto Ricans are still waiting for aid to reach them a week, as you said, after Hurricane Maria devastated the U.S. island territory. The logistical difficulty of distributing emergency aid cannot be overstated when so much of Puerto Rico's roads, bridges, ports, and communications were completely destroyed. San Juan Mayor Carmen Yulin Cruz on MSNBC echoed other Puerto Rican officials who expressed gratitude for federal aid, but said that the scale of the disaster is so mind-bogglingly enormous that much more is needed.
We need diesel, we need gas, we need running water, we need some sort of way for people to find their way around, and we need our hospitals not to become death traps. So this is a big SOS for anybody out there.
The Defense Department says that only 44% of the island's residents have access to potable drinking water. That's 1.5 million people, and that out of 69 hospitals, only 11 have fuel for electricity. The lack of fuel has already caused the deaths of at least 2 patients in an intensive care unit. Senior citizens are trapped in high-rise buildings in the oppressive heat without food, water, or medicine. President Trump is set to visit Puerto Rico on Tuesday after being roundly criticized for tweets suggesting that Puerto Rico is somehow to blame for Hurricane Maria's catastrophic destruction.
And let's underscore this. The power is going to be out, as officials estimate, for 6 months in Puerto Rico. I mean, we've said over and over again this is a humanitarian crisis, but I don't think people understand the scale of the disaster and potential catastrophe that we're now looking at.
The Trump administration does appear to be ramping up its emergency response, deploying more U.S. military assets, including the U.S. Navy hospital ship the Comfort and the 101st Airborne Division, but those will take several days to arrive.
Yeah, well, take your time. That medical ship Comfort had been sitting there in dock at the U.S. mainland for days before it was even shipped out, and it's going to take days before it even gets to the island.
On Thursday, more than a week after the storm, and after much criticism from both Republicans and Democrats, the Trump administration finally waived the Jones Act to speed up fuel deliveries. That's a century-old law limiting shipping between U.S. ports to only U.S.-flagged vessels, which also happens to increase costs. The administration waived the Jones Act in Texas and Florida after Hurricanes Harvey and Irma. Trump had told a press gaggle on Wednesday, quote, "There's a lot of people who work in the shipping industry that don't want the Jones Act lifted."
But they didn't mind lifting it for Texas and Florida, just not for the 3.5 million citizens in Puerto Rico. Got it.
In response, the former head of U.S. Foreign Disaster Assistance said Trump's reasoning, quote, "almost sounds like profiteering by U.S. shipping companies off an emergency like this."
Well, what good are natural disasters if someone can't profiteer off them?
And by the way, federal aid is also slow to reach the U.S. Virgin Islands, which were also devastated by Hurricanes Irma and Maria and are also in dire need. The similarities to the Bush administration's botched response to Hurricane Katrina are striking, although this is on a much broader scale. Despite the humanitarian disaster in Puerto Rico, Trump and congressional Republicans on Wednesday focused on their proposals to enact massive tax cuts. Amid all of the bad news, however, some good news. The nation of Nicaragua will ratify the United Nations Paris Climate Agreement as an act of solidarity with nations suffering climate change impacts. That leaves just the United States and Syria as the only outlier nations not a part of the global accord to act on climate change.
I'm very proud.
Finally, Washington State has denied a key permit for a huge proposed coal export terminal in Longview, Washington, intended to ship coal to China. State Ecology Director Maya Bell on rejected it on the grounds it would lead to unacceptable increases in local pollution and public health impacts. It was the last of six proposed coal export facilities for the West Coast. All have been canceled.
Well, that's some good news.
Yes.
I knew you'd find some somewhere.
We try.
For much more on all of those stories and the ones we couldn't get to, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Find us, follow us, and share us worldwide on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Well, I've had an education. Apparently, they go crazy in L.A. They go crazy in New York. They go crazy in London. They go crazy in Rome. Apparently, there are a lot of people going crazy. Hey, get off my lawn! Yeah, thanks for the... And there's other stuff out there. The clip that Kelly sent me was something called Timber featuring somebody somehow. I'm not conversant. But that one, I checked that one out during the break too, and that appeared to poke some fun at your typical redneck country. Gone a dancing in a honky tonk kind of scenario. So that too. Mm-hmm. All right then. Let's run over to the phones. Oh, by the way, there's an attempt on the table, courtesy of Brother Deacon Asa, who wants to, because numerology, and since we missed out on the rapture last week, Brother Deacon Asa says, I'm looking for six obnoxious organisms to match my ostentatious offerings. I think we're working with O's here. Namely, Asa's looking for six other people to jump in at $66.66 so that we'll get something near to actually... close to wiping out fundraising all the way up to now, which would be freaking awesome. Thank you, Asa, for the challenge, and thank you to everybody who responds, and hopefully some people will. 17 past the hour, and let's run over and check in with John somewhere out on the road. Hey, John.
Hey, excuse me. If you'll accept it tomorrow, because PayPal and my card don't talk till tomorrow.
I understand.
I'll jump in for 66.
All right, 66, cool. 66. So we're down to five, and just watch out for any seven-headed, horned beasts or anything that you might run across out on the highway. Thank you, John.
That sounds like my ex-wife.
Wait a minute.
Never married, but still.
My Antichrist ex-wife, please. Yes.
Yeah, that's a certain topic.
On the horn.
But you asked a question, which although I can't swear to the total validity of it, but it meets a lot of the research I've done. But a lot of Puerto Rico's debt is some of the same shenanigans that they pulled off with Greece when Greece ran up a fairly heavy debt when they got into the euro. A bunch of hedge fund bankers and stuff out of Europe refinanced the loan through through banks from Europe, and they did the same thing. The hedge funds jumped in on the Puerto Rico debt because they could get a better interest rate out of Puerto Rico debt than they could get out of U.S. sovereign debt. And they just basically racked up, again, it's like refinancing. If you're already in the hole, then you have to refinance. You're in more of a hole. And now everybody's, oh, my God, they're going to default on their loan. Well, as far as I'm concerned, yay. But that's me.
Well, this is one of those places where the intersection of capitalist ideas of finance don't really intersect particularly well with the realities of living on a closed system planet that's subject to things like hurricanes. I mean, what are those hedge fund pigs going to do? You come down and kneecap some dehydrated Puerto Ricans?
If they get a chance. I mean, the difference between a banker and a mafioso is just that one wears a pinstripe suit and the other doesn't. You know, it's the same crap, you know. I got into a moderate level argument with a guy this morning about interest rates and stuff, and he's like, well, you know, interest rates are just the price of money. I said, yeah, if I borrow from you and you hand me $100 and you charge me an interest rate, that's one thing. But if some bank conjures it up out of thin air and then charges you the same interest rate, you know, how fair is that?
Well, and it's not just the interest rates are not just the cost of money. They are also, if we want to get theological about it, a guaranteed ticket into hell.
Oh, yeah. Well, that old usury thing. But remember, the Catholics had a get-out-of-jail-free card. They had the Jews.
Kind of.
They couldn't pay interest.
But there's even some usury stuff in the Old Testament.
Yeah.
Because it's in the Old Testament that you get the introduction of the concept of Jubilee, which I'm glad I was actually thinking about it. We kind of need, Jubilee was one of those things that happened every few years where all the debts just got, were supposedly just wiped off the books and everybody started fresh. I'd say Puerto Rico needs a Jubilee. And the other thing Puerto Rico needs, unless of course they don't want it, because I don't want to force something on somebody that doesn't want it. John, do they need statehood?
Oh my God!
Or
Bob,
do they? Or wait!
I almost messed up and took the guy. I owe him a quarter. But you want to add a bunch of little brown people that are probably going to vote Democratic? And oh no, my goodness!
Oh yeah, that's right.
What
that's why DC can't. Oh. DC's so black.
You know,
that's why
they can't be a state either. Yeah, they can do primaries, but they're not allowed to vote in the big stuff. You know, no, we can't have that.
All kidding aside, aren't there also some tax implications? Aren't there some ways that being a Puerto Rican, being a territorial citizen, as opposed to a full-fledged U.S. citizen, aren't there some tax implications involved with that too?
I think so, but I couldn't give you the specifics. It was one of the little articles I read when I was reading up about Puerto Rico's debt stuff that it's tangled up, and one of the reasons why they're in debt is because businesses could open up in Puerto Rico. For a while was like a business haven. It was kind of like having a care, you know, it was kind of like doing the whole, Cayman Island routine, but still be in the United States, where you could dump your money and off, you can incorporate your company in Puerto Rico and get tax benefits and stuff like that. It's kind of like dipping your toe in that, tax haven water without just all out committing to it. So they went there. They went that way for a while, and they had a real good economic growth. But then, I guess from what I understand, that either during the Obama administration or something like that, something changed, and suddenly they're doing business in Puerto Rico wasn't as advantageous as it used to be because their wages started going up because they leaned fairly lefty, and they still have a fair amount of.
Okay.
You know, that whole attractive place to do business was disappearing,
I just saw something. Apparently, Mar-a-Lago Mussolini has been silent on Twitter or hasn't tweeted anything about Puerto Rico all day long.
Yeah, they probably stuck him on a helicopter and they got a fat lady sitting on him or something to keep him away from his phone, because I was sitting at lunch and I was kind of watching a film piece about he was getting on an aircraft or something like that, and there was a couple of comments about how vacant he looked or something, and And it was like, you know, people were trying to yell questions at him. And even if he's not brain damaged or something, I just have this back of the neck feeling that he wants, if he could figure a way to get out of that office without, you know, rubbing poop on his face or something, you know, it just, he does not look like a happy guy. And,
I don't think he even knows where he is. I don't think he even knows where he is half the time.
It may be the case, but,
I just checked here real quick, and as far as taxes are concerned, the primary exception for Puerto Rican citizens is that they don't have to pay the federal personal income tax. They pay into Social Security, but they're excluded from the Supplemental Security Income program, and. They get itsy bitsy tiny little bits of Medicaid funding, considerably less than they would get if it was a state. And of course, they'd probably take the Medicaid expansion under the Affordable Care Act. So we can't be adding anybody on to the Kenyan Muslim usurper Medicaid expansion. That's unbearable.
That entire thing was a cluster hump this week too. I mean, you know, it's like. You have to tip your hat to the Republicans for one thing, if not one thing only, is they are like a dog with a damn bone. They want something. They're gonna finagle and twist and roll and lie and twist and coke and everything else to try to get what they want.
And that segues very nicely to the newly introduced, but not really introduced, tax reform plan. Courtesy of the Mar-a-Lago Mussolini administration, long on talk, mighty short on detail. As I saw one of the financial experts that populate the television this morning, note there's not a single table in their so-called tax reform plan.
No, one of the partial proposals. Is to take the lowest tax bracket, which currently is at 10%, and actually jack it up to 12%. Another piece of it is to to one degree or another, eliminate the estate tax, take the corporate tax rate, and pull it down to, like, at bare minimum, it's like 35% instead of, like, 38 or 39 or something like that, or 25%, I'm sorry, from 35, and... They've got it down where the deductions that you have now, you've got one deduction, I think, for like $6,300 and another one for like $4,800 for individuals, depending on how you do your taxes. Well, they want to not only increase the lower level tax rates, but they say they're going to round it off as a deduction of $12,000, but they're going to remove things like deductions for like, I think it's like,
well, like
home the care
the,
and things
for
like
the,
that.
And, the state tax, the state tax deduction.
Mm-hmm.
And
oh,
that's
yeah.
that's a big deal so that you don't get taxed twice. You pay taxes. But look, the reason I went there is because you mentioned the fact that they're like a dog with a bone and they will worry it until they've got it down to nothing.
Well, it was read. I don't know if you can. I don't know if you picked it up or not. But about maybe a week or so ago, before they really made this last push for the healthcare repeal, it was reported. And again, you know, six and a half dozen, you know, bags of salt or anything you want on it. But it was reported that the Koch brothers had sent out a notification that they would fund for 2018 a $400 million war chest to the Republican Party. To contribute towards the 2018 elections, but it had a caveat built into it that said they would only give that money if they got Obamacare repeal and tax cuts. And the stories were saying that was the main reason that Lindsey Graham and all them were pushing so hard to pass anything.
They're like surgeons with chainsaws in their hands. Okay, I don't know if you saw the Lindsey Graham story earlier today, John, but oh my God, some reporters were talking to Lindsey, and Lindsey said, in response to the question, you've been working to overhaul this for 7 years, talking about healthcare. Why is this so hard? And he said, well, I've been doing it for about a month. I thought everybody else knew what the hell they were talking about, but apparently not. We looked at the history of welfare reform, and we think it can be applied to health care. They went after something, and let's remember, the Cassidy half, Bill Cassidy, is that his name? The Cassidy half of Graham Cassidy is one of those godforsaken, you know, just like Tom Price, Republican doctors who thinks that because some misbegotten medical school handed him a sheepskin, telling him he could go out and with an appropriate level of insurance hurt people and get away with it. Remember that old saying, and I mean no offense to anybody in the medical community, but it's true. There's two of them. One, doctors are the only profession who get to bury their mistakes. And two, what Mark Twain said, I believe to this day that when doctors and undertakers pass on the street, they wink at each other. And so, you know, lo and behold, here's this guy who thinks that because he managed to get a C- in anatomy 1 year, that he's capable of dealing with the business end of making sure that everybody who gets sick can go to the doctor and get the treatment that they need.
Well, that's the damn thing. I mean, take Dr. Carson as an example. He may have been a perfectly fine surgeon for all I know, but anything outside of surgery, he's as dumb as a goddamn box of rocks. And no, you know,
grain silos people, and whatnot.
You know, running the business of insurance and financing health care and everything, that is not an easy thing to do. And I've said this so many times that I've pissed off so many people in so many places. I've said it over and over again. I said 36 out of 37 industrialized countries in the world have some form of universal health care for their people. Can't you take a damn hint? You know, it's, you know, and yet this country is so fetished on money, money, money. Where's the money going to come from? How's it going to pay for it? Blah, blah, blah. Why can't I?
And yet, oddly enough, I mean, because I don't know, maybe you've got time to listen to a lot of different media out there on the road. Maybe you caught something I missed. But did you notice that how are we ever going to pay for it is a question we never ask about, like, proposed new flying paperweights? We never asked that. We never asked that about the massive socialist institution that is the United States military. How are we going to pay for it? Well, screw how we're going to pay for it. We're going to pay for it because it's the military and it keeps us free.
Yeah.
Can you explain to me, John, why can't we use a slogan like, because it keeps us free, to describe health care? Because, you know, somebody who has, say, wellness care and can get checked for breast cancer, prostate cancer, colon cancer, make sure that their blood is flowing nicely through their veins and not getting blocked off and whatnot. Isn't the person who has that going for them, isn't their freedom more immediately protected than their freedom is by having somebody sitting on a rock in Afghanistan protecting some rare earth elements to keep the Chinese from getting them?
Well, I've got my personal theory, but I mean, whether you want to listen to it or not, but it just seems to me that, you know, when you spend ever since the beginning of this country, there's always been this, I hate to use the term, but it's been the kind of a deification of the military. You know, support the troops.
We could use fetishization. That's another good one.
Yeah, I'll buy that for a dollar. I mean, it's, and that has an effect. You know, you can, I mean, every, You take for instance, using one of your paperweights as an example. Now, I'm probably a little bit off on exactly the percentages, but I'm willing to bet you that if you took if you actually took one of those things like they see in like the Avengers movie or something like that, and Tony Stark does this thing over a desk, and all of a sudden he's got this hologram or thing that's got this, and he does this little wave his arms out, and all of a sudden it breaks apart into its component pieces. Well, you take each one of them pieces. You take the jet engine. That's built in some place in Massachusetts.
I know exactly where you're going. Yes, that stupid flying paperweight has some component of it manufactured in every. Is this where you're going? In every single congressional district in the United States.
And if not congressional, if it's not every single one for that particular thing, but if you take all the tanks and planes and all the little, and the little handshake agreements that says you okay it from my guy, I'll nod and wink towards your, you know, I don't have any plane parts being built in my district, but I've got parts of the Abrams tank being built in my little piece of the world. You give me a nod and wink that says you'll back up my Abrams tank piece, and I'll nod and wink towards your, you know, Ariane or the bolts that hold on the landing gear or whatever the hell it is. And, you know, it's profit, baby. It's jobs. It's, you know, if you told.
Yeah, but see, and I'm not arguing for the sake of argumentativeness, John. But the same can be said for healthcare. There are doctor's offices and hospitals in every single congressional district in the United States.
Yeah, but problem is, Bob, you can only go to that well so many times, because sooner or later, it's like the argument I've got with my company right now. I'm having a big butt back and fight about unpaid labor. I'm liable to get my butt fired here in the next couple of weeks if this fight gets any worse. But the doctors, you know, if they could get a nice thing going on with like TV shows and stuff that show how wonderful and patriotic doctors are, instead of having, you know, every TV show be about cops and law and order and mine hunters and all this stuff, you know, they'd have that thing going for them as well. But remember, you know, people, this is a Darwinistic, social Darwinistic country. If you don't make the right decisions, why should you? You smoked. Why should you have health care? Because your smoking is causing my insurance costs to go up. You bastard. Oh, you're fat. You got diabetes. You know, you're causing my health care to go expensive. Why should I pay for your abortion pills? This country is a bunch of nasty, selfish people. They see health care.
Time out. I don't think we've ever given a cowbell for a profound statement of the obvious, but you just got one, John.
I'll shake and quiver in happiness. But, yeah, I mean, you know, the military can always wrap itself up in the flag, but I see this a lot in the world, is that, you know, especially in things like health care. You hear it all the time, especially in the red states and stuff that I pass through. Why should I pay for your mistakes? The military, it's everybody. You know, we got to support the troops regardless. It's like this bullshit going on with this kneeling business. You know, I've watched on my feeds the last 3 or 4 days. I've got people, you know, feeds stacked up like cordwood. I'm burning my season tickets to insert name of team here because them rat bastards, they disrespect in this country and blah, 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 and then this, that, something else. Because they don't want to think about what it actually means to be an American. They don't care. They want that magic eight ball world of theirs. They don't want to pay for that little brown guy around the street. The whole crap with Puerto Rico now. Guarantee goddamn to you, if it had been Hyannis Port or something like that, they got smacked with a hurricane, the money would have been flowing. The hospital ship would have been docked there before the hurricane even hit. No problem. But a bunch of Spanish speaking little brown people, no. No, it's for this bunch, is like pulling eye teeth out of dinosaurs.
Well, right, because I think this ties in, John, with something we've observed for a while. For your average maggots, anybody who speaks Spanish is Mexican.
Yep.
It doesn't matter if you are from Tierra del Fuego, you're Mexican. And that also applies to Spanish-speaking parts of the Caribbean. To the maggots, they're not particularly concerned about the U.S. response to and when we talk about the tragedy, when we talk about the horror that is coming, and tragedy's the wrong word again, when we talk about the horror that has already developed and the even greater horror that is coming out of Puerto Rico, we need to understand that some of it is the storm, and some of it is just good old-fashioned laissez-faire American capitalism, and some of it is just good old-fashioned, evil old-fashioned American racism. Because anywhere that Spanish is spoken, it's Mexicans. Even on the parts of the Caribbean where it's French. I mean, honest to Jesus, do you think maggots can tell the difference between somebody speaking Creole Spanish and somebody speaking Creole French? Because I don't. They're all just Mexicans. And as such, it does not matter if they live or die.
No, because they're foreigners. You know, I mean, there was questions brought up, and it may have been partly through your show and some others, but an argument was put forth maybe 2 weeks ago or so, and I really decided that was an interesting concept. Let me dig into it. And in 1733, the British Parliament passed a law effectively stating that slavery was not consistent with English law. And that started a process that by about 18, it was like 17 something. I can make it the dates a little bit off, but about the early part of the 18th century, England passed the anti-slavery bill. And the argument that was being put forth by this guy, it was so kind of off the wall that I said, is there some truth to this? And so I did some poking around and did the internet and even broke down and actually got lucky and passed by was at a library, actual real library. I haven't been in one of those in years, and was able to have a librarian help me out. But the short version of it is that the argument was put forward that one of the strong reasons, although not very often talked about, for the American Revolutionary War was the fact that the slaveholders in the United States actually were already aware that slavery was being outlawed throughout the British colonies. And one of the reasons for the Revolutionary War was to break the ties to England so that if they did pass that law, it would not affect them. And I thought that was and I looked at the timing of the dates of the passage of the laws and what have you. And I said, you know what? I don't know if there's any proof to it, but you know, this is one of those eerie little coincidences that, you know, would be interesting if Dr. Bill could have dialed in on something like this, because the coincidence just seems to be a little bit more than just casual. And I'm like,
well,
wow.
It is. There's that, and there's the other element of the display. One of the you've heard that phrase, no taxation without representation. You know, you're familiar with that.
Mm-hmm.
All the little right wing patriots are, and it's the official motto on the license plates in Washington D.C. and everything. Well, the taxes in question, that was the Stamp Act. And do you know why the Stamp Act was imposed, John?
Tell me, brother.
Okay. So, not too long before the American Revolution, there had been this little set to. It was an expansion of the ongoing bellicosities between Great Britain and France, You know, there was the Hundred Years' War that went from the 14th into the 15th century, and on.
Well, you're talking about the expenses of the French Indian War.
Yes.
Okay.
And so, it had been expensive to prosecute, and so the British Parliament decided that the colonies should actually participate in paying for their for the cost of defending them and keeping them from being under overrun by the French and some perceived indigenous threats.
Oh, you mean the 17th century version of the Heploppers?
That's another part of it too. But you know the racism and the viciousness that is slavery itself really is baked into the entirety of the American experience. And by the way, just because I'll bet you've heard this, there is a myth out there, and it is a darling myth of the right wing, and particularly the neo-Nazis and the Klansmen, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You know, the people that go and read that website that rhymes with light and fart. And it goes like this.
Well, I don't know what them black people is so upset about. The first slaves what was brought to America was white people.
Not true. It's a reference to indentured servitude. And it is so not true that that someone from one of the places that the alleged indentured servants came from actually did the historical research to point out how not true it was. In other words, a researcher, I believe she was a woman, from Ireland, went into it and said,
yeah,
nope, total bullshit, total right-wing neo-Nazi trope, ain't true, because, see, not true, yeah.
Yeah, you see... Although you don't see it as much now, but it was used to be very popular around, you know, the Confederate States and down in the South. You stop in a truck stop. There used to be on the little magazine racks, there used to be this, and you still see it occasionally, but it's nowhere near as popular as it used to be or carry as much. There used to be this magazine. It was actually a fairly thick little folded magazine. And it had, if I can remember the title exactly, it said, The Real Causes of the Civil War. And it went into this thing about how the North was taxing the South exorbitantly high in order to fund their, you know, to fund their economies and tax the cotton that was shipped up to the North, blah, da, 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 and all. And, I mean, it had like five, six different things. And I think your thing there about the whole indentured servitude thing was in there as well. And, I mean, it's just like when you bring up to one of these wankers that go, America's a Christian country. Well, no, jackass. One of the first treaties we ever freaking put in play and signed
was the Treaty of Tripoli.
Right.
Which contained the language, the United States are in no wise a Christian nation.
Oh, yeah, bring that to them and even show them on, like, bring up little interwebby tubies and things and show it to them. And, oh, do they turn red in the face and stutter and spit their coffee and eventually they end up calling me a communist.
Well, always, absolutely, always.
Oh, of course I'm a communist.
Yeah. Okay.
So let me let you go. I'm sure somebody.
All right. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank
you for the conversation, John. Where are you rolling around these days?
Oh, I am in Texas, which of course is thrilling beyond all recognition. And it's a rainstorm. Water, sky. Woohoo!
Yeah. Well, you know, might want to get off the phone before the lightning gets you.
That's all right.
That's what we were always told when it was coming up a cloud when I was a kid. And you got to get off the phone. Lightning might come in.
Yeah, but that's the only way I can get my workman's comp, because that's the only way I won't make any money if this fight keeps up.
Jesus.
Catch you later, dude.
Take care, and thanks for jumping in on the ACES Challenge. I appreciate it.
Yeah, like I said, you'll probably see it sometime or relatively mid-morning.
Okay, great. So. Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. Our buddy John, on the road somewhere in the wilds of far Texas. And, by the way, also, thanks going out to Labor Man, who jumped in on ACES heathenistic $66.66 challenge. So that's two out of the six that ACES is looking for, and four to go at $66.66 apiece, and we'll have we'll pretty much have tonight knocked down, and we've got an hour and we'll have an hour and 10 minutes to go. To get it done. So thank you. Thank you to Labor Man, and thank you to John, and hopefully some other folks will jump in as well. Lines are open if you want. 304-574-8178. Let's go to Massachusetts and check in. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello, Bob.
Hello.
I'm glad you answered.
I would have been surprised if someone else had.
This is Carl from Western Massachusetts.
Yeah, hey, Carl.
Going back to what John was saying about the Confederate flag and all that crap, I really called up about the C5s, but, anyways, let me start with that.
Okay.
I accost people because I live in Western Mass, and my grandfather on my mother's side was a soldier. I think I told you that before, was a soldier in the German War. In the German army during World War II. He wasn't a Nazi. He was a anti-aircraft battery commander.
Right.
Like
he was a member he was a member of the Wehrmacht.
Yes. But he wasn't a Nazi. And he got killed on the last day of the war. He just dropped everything he had and he walked away and he got shot in the back by the Americans.
Yeah.
He just had enough. He just was sick and tired of the killing. And everything else. And he really didn't see much combat or anything. He was up by, I think, the Baltic Sea or something. Somewhere where they just, nobody was. You know, but I accost people with that fucking flag, the rebel flag and the Nazi flag. I cannot stand them. And this Sunday I was up at a flea market and there was some badass punk there with a heritage, not hate, T-shirt on with a little slogan in the front and a big one on the back. Fat bastard. You know, just a punk. And I looked at him and I said, why are you wearing that here? Well, I'm from blah, 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 blah. And he gave me all this blah, 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 blah. Yeah. And I said, well, you know, bring that back down there. And after I walked up, about 20 seconds after I walked away from him, it's not heritage, not hate, or it's heritage of hate.
There we go.
And, you know, if the only thing that pisses me off more than seeing that flag is seeing that flag in the back of a pickup truck flying next to the United States flag.
Oh, I've seen that quite a bit.
Oh, that pisses me off. I want to just throw a rock right through the fucking window and take some bleach and throw it on that fucking flag.
So was the guy with the T-shirt, was he just temporarily up in Western Mass and he was really from South Carolina?
From North Carolina. He told me he's from, I said, are you from here? And he didn't really have an accent at all. I couldn't tell an accent. He was from North Carolina. And I was like, punk. You know, it just went through my mind, punk. You know, well, if you're up here, you know, I hear them say all the time, well, my great-great-grandpappy, too, fought against them to keep that flag and keep your hate out of this country and keep this country as the United States and not subvert it into, you know, a slave-owning country.
Well, and a Balkanized continent that could be rolled over by Europe.
Yes. And it just, it really pisses me off. Every time I see that fucking flag, and we have them, especially out, you go out into the Berkshires out here, and, you know, you see them out. You see them on the back of, the bumper stickers, and you go to the fairs around here, you see them selling them, you know, as trinkets and T-shirts and mirrors and everything else. You know, it just pisses me off. But
and you want to look at it and say, so would you go to, so would you feel comfortable, you've come to the north where you consider us people up here Yankees, would you go to Germany and wear a swastika T-shirt?
No, because you get arrested.
Yeah, so maybe save that one for the next one.
Oh, I've had that argument. Oh, I've had, because I've been to Germany. I've spent 5 summers when I was a kid in Germany, visiting relatives, and it's not just 2 weeks. I mean, 2 or 3 months.
Yeah,
visiting my
enough for some enough for some immersion to take place.
Yes, and you don't do that. It's not there. It's just these people just, and you see the people who these. Not even kids. There's people my age in their 50s that, you know, embrace this. Oh, I'm a rebel. Do you even know what it means? You have no fucking clue. Oof. But anyways, what you were saying about, get off of my hate, but what you were saying about the C-5s?
Yeah.
I live close enough to Westover Air Force Base to hear them play Taps at night. And in the morning, if I'm outside early enough to let, or
to hear Reveille
at that time, and when they, I hear them playing Taps.
Well, Reveille in the morning, Taps at night, right?
Yes, exactly. Okay. I'm sorry, and I'm ex-military too, but C-5s are still around.
Okay,
C-5As,
yeah.
C-5As, there's only two of them left, two or three of them left. The C-5Bs, they were all converted to Ms, and I'm glad they did, because they just finished them probably 2 months ago, and they're wonderfully quiet. You can't even hear them. A C-131 or a C-130 is louder than a C-5.
Oh, I know how loud a C-130 is, because we've got 5 or 6 of them parked down at Jaeger Airport in Charleston, and they fly around on weekends when the West Virginia Air National Guard gets to get them out. And
the old C-5s, though, were incredibly loud. Now when they reverse thrusters, because I live right against the river, and I'm between them, and once in a while, maybe 4 times a year, they come maybe 500 feet off the deck of the river, and you used to hear them just scream. Now it's just so quiet. I could talk over one, probably 1,000 feet above my head when they fly over on the phone. They're that quiet. They upgraded their, they fully gut them. They upgrade. I know a lot of people who work on them. They upgrade the spars and the wings and all the supports, and they put all new electronics, and they upgrade the pods that hold the engines on the wings,
and they have an amazing capacity, don't they?
I used to load them when I was in the Army. In fact, I've loaded them in Puerto Rico at Roosevelt Roads Army Air Force Base, whatever it is. It's an Air Force / or no, it used to be an Air Army base. Now it's nothing, I guess. But it used to be an Army base, and then it was a Navy / Air Force base. But I used to load them down there.
And so, okay, so tell me. I mean, you sound like, sounds like you alongside Sparky, who back in the day worked on B-52s, you've got some big aircraft experience. And I presume you know what the Berlin airlift was.
Yes.
we're not doing anything resembling a Berlin airlift with Puerto Rico, are we?
No, no. They could do that with barges. Puerto Rico is so close, they could do that with barges. They don't even have to, and it's cheaper with a barge than with a plane. Now, a plane, you could airlift, you could airdrop, but then you have to use parachutes, which takes a little bit more. But parachutes, you could get in more inland. But like Randy Rhodes had somebody, I don't know who it was talking, was he said, you know, the 7th Transportation Group, which I was part of, and the 24th Battalion, which is part of the 7th Transportation Group, could have been in there last week with causeways. And causeways are when you put those big pontoons and you drive over them.
Oh yeah, and see that, that's the thing I'm getting at, Carl. When I hear, you know, when I hear cut rate Claudius talking about it, well, you know, but there's this thing called the Atlantic Ocean. It's a big ocean.
It's an ocean.
It's big. Some tough stuff, the Atlantic Ocean. I'm thinking, you know, I'm guessing this isn't, I mean, I'm guessing the logistics for this wouldn't be quite as complicated as, say, Normandy or freaking Incheon, okay?
Nobody's shooting.
All
the stuff. They keep the stuff on big barges and huge barges. We used to have to go and tie stuff down. They have these barges that they're just filled with military equipment, brand new Humvees, brand new cranes, brand new everything that you could run a small army with. They're just all. They're all just wrapped up, basically, and tied down on a barge inside of a non. It's not a top deck barge. It's a barge that it's basically a ship, a cargo ship, but it gets pushed around. They just push it to a port and tie it off and leave it there. But they're all filled with military equipment.
Well, see, one of the privileges that I have in doing this program is that I get to talk to a lot of folks from a lot of different places who have a lot of varied expertise. And you know, yeah. So you've got the experience you're talking about. I've talked with Sparky, Ron, who can't reach us right now because he's in the sandbox, and they don't allow Skyping out of where he is. Four tours with the Navy in Vietnam, and I was reminded just because I've been watching the documentary and seeing all those fleets of helicopters, and we've got our buddy Dennis down in Kentucky. Who worked in and around helicopters during the Vietnam conflict, and I'm pretty sure we still got some helicopters in the military. And so
just a few, there's a couple.
So I'm thinking, you know, unlike Barbuda, which is flat and got flattened by Irma, Puerto Rico. As is also the case with Hispaniola and Cuba and Jamaica, is kind of mountainous. And so I'm thinking, you know, we've probably got people in the United States military who are actually trained at getting cargo to remote, somewhat inaccessible locations. I don't have any military experience. I was never in the military, but I'd just kind of like to know, am I kind of close on that, Carl?
Yes, and they could use it as a training exercise. Literally, they could use this as a training exercise in how to get equipment or something to people. But the best way they could do it is with those barges that are just. I seen a picture of all these barges with trucks and tractor trailers on, with containers on.
Right, I'm thinking in terms of the
White House to say move them in,
and
that fucker won't do it.
Right, and so where is Mad Dog Mattis in all this? You know, that guy flew off to what, Afghanistan the other day. The Secretary of Defense flew off to Afghanistan.
in the middle of an absolute horror unfolding in Puerto Rico that might need the expertise of the military in these sorts of logistic operations, and he's in Afghanistan, and then he made a surprise stop in some other country in the Middle East where, you know, whatever. So the question that I'm kind of trying to get at here, yeah, I agree with you about the barges for, and you know, seaborne transportation generally, but for people who have not had water for 2 weeks.
Yes.
That kind of demand, you know, you could move a lot of water with one of those C-5s. You can move a lot of water with a C-130. And then you get it there, and you can move a lot of the water from, say, San Juan to the interior with helicopters, even if you can't get through with the trucks. Because remember, there's a collapsed dam out there somewhere.
That I'm not an expert with, but I think moving water like that by air is just not just expensive, it's kind of I think you'd want to move water treatment plants more than water itself by air.
Right.
Because it's expensive, it's hard. Water is just, yes, you need it, but water's kind of hard to drop. I don't even think they can, you know, as far as bottled water, it's, like I'm saying, it's not my expertise, but I think water is something that you want to make there because we have reverse osmosis and water purifying plants, things like that. I think you'd be better off doing that than dropping bottled water.
And whatever space, you know, whatever the heavy. Whatever it is heavy, whatever the methodology we're talking about, though, it's pretty much not being done. And that's the embarrassing part of this. Yes, it's heroic to have stories about Pitbull and Mark Cuban and United Airlines, but that's not we the people. That's them the billionaires and them the corporations.
Yes. Yes.
And you know, Sparky just told me, you know, aircraft carriers can make 10,000 gallons of water a day.
For their own people.
As long as it
isn't radioactive, then they'll give it the radioactive water to their own people, like they did, where was that, in Japan?
Well, there's that, yeah. You mean after Fukushima? Right.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And Clarence just dropped me an email saying, Carl's right. The U.S. military has pre-positioned supplies all over the world. They have them on barges, and in warehouses.
Yep.
And I'm not trying to sit here and pretend that I'm an expert that I am not. All I'm trying to suggest is we can do this better than we're doing it. And we could have been doing it, and that's the thing. We could have been doing it better than we have.
He doesn't give a fuck about those people.
Ta-da!
That's the biggest thing. He does not give a fuck about anybody but his own family. And then if he doesn't,
Do you remember?
If you can't grope them.
Right. This is this little blast from the past. Do you remember in the aftermath of Katrina? Do you remember? And George Bush went on to write his autobiography of his memoir of his time as president, and he said that the worst day of his presidency, if I recall this correctly, was not September 11th, 2001, when 3,500 people got killed in various attacks. That wasn't the worst day of his presidency. The worst day of his presidency wasn't Katrina itself. The worst day of his presidency wasn't, you know, when they missed the 6'7" Arab with the portable dialysis machine over there at Tora Bora. He said in his memoir that the worst moment of his presidency, George W. Bush's, was the day that Kanye West said,
George Bush don't care about black people. Remember that?
Yes, and we need somebody to say Donald Trump doesn't care about middle class and poor people.
Well, not to split hairs or anything. I think we could. I don't know. Can somebody get Kanye West on the blower to get in front of a camera somewhere? I know he's camera shy and everything, but could we get Kanye West in front of a camera to say Donald Trump don't care about no Puerto Ricans?
Yeah, I thought about that today. But we need to get somebody different than Kanye West. It needs to be somebody who, maybe Mark Cuban, come on and just say that. Not rich and you're not white and you can't kiss his ass, you don't give a fuck about
you. Okay, let's process this. Who really gets under his skin? Maybe we could get Rosie O'Donnell to say Donald Trump don't care about no Puerto Ricans.
No, because then he could hold her up as a pariah.
Okay, so you know what would just drive him absolutely barking at the moon, tearing at his weird hair, sprayed roach crazy. Have Hillary Clinton say Donald Trump don't care about no Puerto Ricans. Of course, she wouldn't say it with bad grammar. I'm just trying to think of somebody who could do that, and just absolutely shame him.
That's just it though. He's beyond shame. Nobody could shame him. I mean, even Howard Stern can't shame that asshole.
Oh, let's see. Who's he watching all the time? Well, he watches Chris Hayes every night. We know that.
But Chris Hayes wouldn't do that. Well, Chris, no, he couldn't. He wouldn't do that. He's too.
Yeah, but they let me get away with saying that he'd gone full Nancy, and that apparently got under his skin pretty good.
Oh, that's true.
Maybe I need to do it. Who knows?
Listen to you.
I'll get on the blower. Yeah. Well, I mean, he saw.
He doesn't care. He's beyond shame.
Well, but see, the thing is, he was watching Chris that night that we called him on the carpet for not declaring a national emergency on opioids. That was the night that I said he'd gone full Nancy. And the next morning, by God, boom, he's changed his mind, and it gets declared a national emergency. So yeah, who knows?
Yeah. Ooh.
There's got to be somebody out there. There's got to be somebody, some way of reaching him. You know what? Okay. Let's think of it this way. How about somebody that we know he would listen to?
Glenn Beck?
No. What if Steve Bannon said Donald Trump don't care about no Puerto Ricans, but he'd be saying it because he approves of that because he's or some prominent neo-Nazi said it, and they'd be saying and approving.
I don't think he'd believe the Spire Keats if they said it.
Well, oh, wait a minute. We got it here. Matt in San Francisco just gave us our answer. Could Big Bad Vladdy Daddy say Donald Trump don't care about no Puerto Ricans? Because if Putin said it, he'd pay attention.
That's the only one. Okay, that's the only one.
Well, I think we have our answer, and we've got a cowbell for Matt. So,
oh, I finally got a cowbell. Yeah, I'll let you go now.
All right, with that, I mean, you're never going to top that.
One more thing.
Yeah.
One more quick thing about the kneeling.
Yeah.
And that was one of the biggest reasons. I haven't saluted the flag for probably 10 years. The only thing that gets me is when I go to either Memorial Day or Veterans Day and I hear taps. I might wear a T-shirt or bring my Desert Storm hat that I have embroidered and everything. And the only thing that's Taps brings me to tears, but the only thing that really, really got me was when a little seven or eight-year-old girl gave me a little heart with "thank you for your service." And that was because I realized that probably her younger brother might be going to serve in the next war that some rich guy is going to make her kids go to. And I've got a 10-year-old boy.
Rich man's war, poor man's fight.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I took him to Cub Scouts tonight. And he said the Pledge of Allegiance, and I don't tell him not to.
Well, when people get to their...
But people don't understand. They really don't.
No.
And until they've... I gotta go.
I understand, Carl. You take care. It's okay. Bye now. Carl calling from Western Mass. Thanks, Carl. When I mentioned that Ferg was talking about going into the military, I cannot tell you the number of emails and various communications I received from veterans telling me to tell him, don't do it. Don't do it. And that's pretty profound. We've got a little competition going on. Marty's suggesting that, just to be really entertaining, how about if Colin Kaepernick says, Donald Trump don't care about no Puerto Ricans? Ooh, he might spontaneously combust. Trump, not Colin Kaepernick. Meanwhile, Laurel suggesting just have Steve Bannon call him a loser president. He hates being called a loser more than anything else in this world. Almost makes you think that maybe it's something his daddy called him. Yeah. Laurel also pointing out that the maggots and their fellow travelers are now equating people who don't stand for the anthem with... that's a disgusting graphic. That's a disgusting meme. With the 9/11 terrorists, a photograph of the New York skyline when the World Trade Center was still there, a flag, and "I stand for the flag." And down in the lower right-hand corner, a gory Jesus hanging on the tree. "I kneel at the cross." You know what? I was raised Southern Baptist, and we weren't big on the whole kneeling business. I don't recall ever kneeling in the Southern Baptist Church. Your evangelicals are not going to take kindly to all that kneeling stuff. Michael in Madison. Jennifer Lopez, the answer is J-Lo. She needs to say it. She has the star power and the credibility that Kanye has lost. And she has family there. You know, that's the thing. In something with the enormity of Harvey hitting the Texas Gulf Coast, or the damage that was occasioned by... Irma, as it went up the Florida Peninsula. There's going to be trouble, and there's going to be problems, and people are going to lose communications. But generally speaking, they're going to be back in a couple of days. Or there will be some means of getting to somewhere to get word out. We're 2 weeks post Maria, and there are tens of thousands of people in this country who still have not heard from their loved ones on the island. And I can't begin to comprehend the fear and the terror that would obtain with something like that. It's unspeakable. And we really don't know. I'm not saying what it is or isn't going to be, but we really don't know how bad it is. Somehow or another, we managed to have flyover footage showing homes in the hills, and there's just, there might be four walls standing and the roof gone. Or maybe where there was a mountain, it's just washed away. And we still don't fully know, the best I can tell, we don't fully know the outcome of what happened after the dam burst. And this is like I said, I resist the word tragedy. This is an unfolding national horror. This is ours. This belongs to the United States. It's not because some other colonial power didn't show up. It's because the colonial power that is us didn't show up. We own this. And it's a horror. And it is a mark of undying shame on us as a nation. Earlier in the program, I was talking about the $400,000 or so dollars that Tom Price racked up flying private charters from D.C. to Philadelphia 26 separate times from May to now. He is one globe-trotting DHHS secretary, or at least country-trotting. And there's an element of let them eat cake about that. That this administration of grifters and grafters, punks and petty thugs, bullshit artists, and snake oil sales creeps from the whole right-wing bullshit industry. The idea that they're just on the loose you want to talk about looters? There's your looters. And I use the word shame, but it's not enough. Some of this feels a little bit like what it felt like when we attacked the innocent people of Iraq. It's past shame. It's the realization, in that case, it was the realization that there were real, live, honest-to-God, prosecutable war crimes being committed in our names. And it's like that with the Puerto Rico situation, only it's not what's being done in our names, it's what's not being done in our names. Steve from Georgistan just said, I threw money at You Caring, YOUCARING, YouCaring.com. It's sponsored by Ricky Martin. He was on the Ellen Show in tears today. I didn't know what else to do, Bob. And that's something entirely appropriate to do. For God's sakes, don't give your money to the Red Cross. Find some other way. Just not the Red Cross. Because they've been exposed, and they are not—they're not a viable means of delivering relief. But I go back to the larger question, and that is, why are we having to rely, a country as wealthy as we are? Granted, the vast majority of that wealth is concentrated in a few grubby hands that operate primarily on Wall Street. Hedge funders and traders and whatnot, and banksters. But a country as wealthy as we are, why, and this is about one's philosophy of government. And I'm kind of old-fashioned where that's concerned. I take that we the people, the first three words of the preamble of the Constitution, in serious earnest. Why are we relying on outside agencies to do what we should be able to do via the government, which is all of us? And I imagine the answer to that question is probably because there are a significant number of people in this country who don't believe in that whole we the people thing. They've been successfully alienated from the idea of government and the idea of themselves. The government, you know, there's us out here and there's them government. And that's not the way it was designed to work. Yeah, I'll get email about how, you know, but, you know, corporatism, but. And but, you know, a bunch of white people writing the Constitution. I understand all of that. But it is an evolutionary process. It's kind of like the intro that I do for Dr. Bill and his virtual center for the study of the Constitution and civic responsibility. I describe it as a study of the political origins of this country and its evolving institutions. Because this country has evolved. Contrary to the constitutional originalists who will, people like Neil Gorsuch who will go forward and take a wrecking ball to this country, that's not the way it was designed. And all that blather about small federal government is bullshit, too. And that quote that you've probably come across from time to time where, you know, and right-wingers pointed out, Thomas Jefferson said, the government is best which governs least. Guess what? Thomas Jefferson never said that. The people who were in charge of Thomas Jefferson's papers, his letters, his writings, his public pronouncements. He never said that. But never mind, it's become an article of right-wing orthodox faith, which, as I have noted previously, you know, you can't challenge it. Jesus. Update coming in from Laurel. I'm watching the anthem live on TV at Lambeau Field before the Packers-Bears game. Nobody's kneeling, but both teams are linking arms up and down the sidelines. Very large military presence on the field, by the way. Of course there is. Hello, fascism. Oh, and speaking of fascism, at 28 minutes past the hour. Oh, I've got to get some thanks out first, though. Thank you. I'm glad I didn't want to forget that. Thank you very kindly. Thank you to Carolyn for jumping in. We've got, let's see, 2, 3, 6. We've knocked out a night's worth of fundraising. So thank you very kindly for that. there are ACES challenge that's on the table. We need to three more at $66.66, and one more at $46.66. Thank you. Laurel reports, lots of Packers fans saluting in the stands, many of them still wearing their Packer hats. Of course. Nobody's going to tell them they don't love the flag, though, are they? you are cynical, Randy. Randy in PA says, I'm waiting for football that uses tanks on both sides with live ammo. Oof. Steve from Georgia Stan asks, why is there even a need for all this rah-rah nationalism before a sporting event? Because money changed hands. The Pentagon paid good money to have the NFL become a recruiting vehicle. That's why. Not so much with other, but yeah, as far as the NFL is concerned, that's the very real reason. But speaking of fascism, I've got a story here that I kind of want to make sure we get to. Because I don't like to blow past things like this. A lawsuit has been filed, and it relates to events that transpired during the protests in the wake of the get out of jail free card that was given to a St. Louis police officer who said, we're going to kill this motherfucker, and then went and killed him, a black man. White cop. There were protests and demonstrations. There was some property damage. But in the midst of all of this, there were also people trying to do First Amendment work. You know, journalism. Reporting on what's going on. I've mentioned previously how the militarized St. Louis cops marched through the streets chanting, whose streets? Our streets. And so it was that, Mayor Lyda Crewson, Mayor of St. Louis, would later say that was not appropriate behavior. Well, appropriate or not, it was a very, very nasty police force. Very nasty. Very nasty. Jesus. Just 8 months of that man has elements of his speech creeping into mine. God damn. The Sunday night of the protests, a filmmaker team, a man and woman named Drew and Jennifer Burbridge, were trying to document what was happening. They were real live, honest to God journalists. They're not just tourists with cameras. And they were in St. Louis late on Sunday night when, having previously rounded up the people who did the property violence, the police decided to kettle everybody else. You've heard of kettling by now. That's where the police foreclose any avenue of exit and then tighten a ring around the people who are in it, and God help them when they get it good and tight. Well, 2 days ago, the Burbridges filed a lawsuit documenting the conduct to which they were subjected by the St. Louis police. They note that at no point in time did the police warn them to leave. At no point in time were they kept from going to the intersection where they were, in fact, recording, taking video of protesters and police. According to the lawsuit papers, once the police had established their perimeter, the officers, the police, began to indiscriminately hose down those inside the perimeter with pepper spray. At this point in time, the Burbridges sat down and held on to each other. That's when one cop looked at Drew Burbridge and said, "That's him!" And two officers grabbed him by each arm and dragged him away from his wife. The Burbridges repeatedly tried to tell the police, "We're media, we're journalists, we're not protesters." And when Drew Burbridge tried to tell him that, that's when the cops deliberately sprayed him into his mouth, into his eyes with pepper spray, and tore the camera from around his neck. Then they set to beating Drew Burbridge. All of this, of course, allegedly, because nobody's ever going to be prosecuted for this. Nobody's ever going to be convicted of this. Nobody's ever going to even be charged with this. This is a civil suit. There will be no criminal punishment for these rampaging, rioting police. They beat Drew Burbridge with their fists, and then they stomped him, and then they put the zip tie cuffs on him. And once his hands were bound, they began to beat him with their clubs. The officers, none of them wore any kind of name tag. None of them wore any sort of means of identifying them. And one of the cops said to him, "You want to take my picture now, motherfucker? You want me to pose for you?" Eventually, they beat Drew Burbridge into unconsciousness. He woke up when an officer grabbed him by the hair and sprayed him in the face with chemicals, more chemicals. Jennifer Burbridge was helpless, watching her husband be molested, assaulted, battered. And the cops would periodically walk up to Jennifer and say things like, "Did you like that? Come back tomorrow and we can do this again." Another cop said, "What did you think was going to happen?" So that's 2017 Trump-merica, where the police have license to do as they please. And of course, it's no surprise, because the President of the United States himself has said... And you know how, like, when they put them in the cars, they'll put their hands on their head to keep them from bumping their head. Yeah, stop doing that. Don't be so nice. Conveying to the police that whatever abuses they want to commit, the president has their backs. And yet, it is so awful, so terrible, that of all people, the interim head of the Drug Enforcement Administration, which has been known as not exactly one of your friendlier law enforcement groups, recently quit. Same with Rosenberg. And he quit, it was reported, specifically because of the brutal fascist attitudes of Donald J. Trump. I got a note from Carol Baker. She said of the Burbridge lawsuit and the account of what they were subjected to. You want to take my picture again now, motherfucker? Not surprised. They tried to keep journalists blocks away in Ferguson, and cops were openly hostile toward anyone carrying a camera. I could talk to people there so long as I wasn't holding a pen and paper or a recording device. They kettle protesters into small areas, making them a target for counter-protesters who routinely beat them, saving the cops the time and trouble. And the legal liability, I added that. We protest in this country at our own peril. The police are not here to serve and protect. They've become a private security force for the oligarchs, and we fucking pay for it. That we do. That we do. So, I don't know we won't hear any more of the lawsuit unless news organizations reach out to the Burbridges to let them further tell their stories. Of course, the police will declare that they are as innocent as newborns. You know, newborn rattlesnake. Drew and Jennifer Burbridge, B-U-R-B-R-I-D-G-E. You might want to look up the story, and you might want to try to maybe go back periodically and see if there's any follow-up. Because this isn't just St. Louis, and as Carol pointed out, it's been like this since Ferguson. It's been this way in other cities. And the kettling business is almost word for word, blow by blow, the same as was done by law enforcement in Washington, D.C. on the day of the inauguration. When the police indiscriminately attacked protesters without even trying to, and I guess this is kind of the heart of the indiscriminately part, without trying to ascertain who were journalists and who were protesters. So, Burbridge, B-U-R-B-R-I-D-G-E. Yeah. Right. We got it. I forgot the caveat. Thank you for reminding me, Arthur. Not all cops, y'all. Not all cops. Arthur noting, yeah, but not all cops are zombie serial killer demons. Kid Mark observing the police does serve and protect. The question is, who what do they serve and who what do they protect? Yep. Laurel noting, fascism is like pizza. The Italians invented it. The Americans perfected it. It may very well be possible to destroy fascism in America, but I'm terribly afraid that goal will not come to pass without the destruction of America as well. That disgusting meme I shared with you, I found posted dozens of times by people who live in the same small town that I do. America and fascism, I fear, have become one. And it's hard to get out from, under. Yeah, Arthur also noting, journalists? Well, that's the worst kind of terrorists. Oh, you know, in the middle of all this seriousness, can we have a little giggle before I go to the phones? Can we have a little giggle? So, some enterprising investigative, curious person, went to check on the voter registration of Jared Kushner. Okay? Jared Kushner, son-in-law of, you know, Tangerine Tiberius. Because I guess it's public record in a place like New York. The story comes from Wired.com. Jared Kushner is registered in the state of New York as a female voter. I'm not laughing at gender issues. I'm laughing at the idea of, well, you probably get it already. If you have to explain the joke. He registered to vote in New York in 2009, and when he did so, he checked the box marked female for gender. And as they note in the report, you know, you look at that and you go, well, you know, people make mistakes. He's just kind of cruising through the form, you know, name, address, zip code, gender, and you just accidentally check the female box because, you know, you're not paying a lot of attention. Happens. Yeah. It's just a screw up. And a spokesman for American Bridge, who did the investigative work that uncovered this, Brad Bynum, said Kushner can't even fill out the most basic paperwork without screwing it up, so it's a mystery why anyone thinks he's somehow going to bring peace to the Middle East. Would anyone but the president's son-in-law still have a West Wing job after repeated disclosure errors and botched a security clearance form? Yeah. He's had to amend his security clearance form time after time after time because he keeps remembering people whose names he forgot to add to his list of foreign contacts before and during the 2016 election and, you know, during the transition period. He's had to add over 100 names to that list. Among those names are a lot of Russian people. People who know people in Kremlin. People who know people in Kremlin and also know people in Russian banks. You get the idea. Oh, and one more thing. Having sort of hit pay dirt in the voter registration in New York, somebody remembered that he used to be a resident of New Jersey. So they went and checked Jared Kushner's registration in New Jersey. I mean, he wouldn't make the same mistake twice, right? No way he accidentally marks female in New York and accidentally marks female in New Jersey. Because after all, the thing in New York, that's just an innocent mistake. I mean, that's just when you know, you're busy and you're, maybe he's thinking about Ivanka or something. Or got a hot date. Who knows? So there's a gender box on the voter registration in New Jersey. And in New Jersey, young Jared, he went to Jared. Young Jared marked for gender unknown. Yeah, unknown. Not male, not female, unknown. Maybe he's gender fluid, gender indeterminate. What's another one of those terms? Gender queer. Intersexed. So, Jared Kushner is either of unknown gender or female. Not that it matters to me. But after all, dad-in-law, do you suppose he calls Trump dad? Is trying to throw every transgendered person in the military out on the street. So there's that. Hey, let's run over and check in. I got Sparky on the line. Hey, Sparky.
Hey, Bob.
What's happening?
Well, I love to Google shit.
Yes.
Well, I just wanted to give your listeners and anybody out there that's interested in a little update, because I can find out shit about the Navy. I know how to find it.
Okay.
Ships, you know, because my dad was in the Navy, my grandfather was in the Navy. But right at the moment, there are two ships in the area, the USS Kearsarge and the USS Wasp, which are both, Marine assault ships, and the 26th Marine Expeditionary Unit is assisting on the islands also.
Yeah, that's one of those helicopter carriers, isn't it? The
yes,
Wasp and the Kearsarge.
Yeah, they're assault ships for the Marine Corps.
Yeah, the stern of it actually opens up, and they can put the landing crafts out, and there's a bunch of helicopters on the deck, and yeah.
Yeah, well, I started searching for LSD classification, because those are the ones landing ship dock.
Yeah.
They're the ones that carry the hydrofoils. They can land on any beach and unload equipment and stuff. LCATs, they're called. I don't know if you've ever seen them.
No.
Do their thing. Well, you know what a hydro.
Yeah, I know what a hydrofoil is.
They run on air, on a cushion of air.
Oh yeah, those they're for like beach landings, amphibians.
Yeah, and they can carry a ton of equipment on them, so they don't need a dock area or anything. You just, if there's a beach, they can land on it and go up the beach and then unload stuff. So there is some ships there at the present time, and I'm sure these ships can manufacture a whole bunch of water, too.
I wonder...
Same as an aircraft carrier.
I wonder when they arrived. Was there any data on that?
No, I'm looking at pictures from yesterday. There's one that was doing missions in Dominica. The Wasp was over in that area, and they were evacuating some people. And then there was the Kearsarge near Puerto Rico.
Oh God, it's heartbreaking. But you know, some of what I was saying about the helicopters, those might come in handy too.
Yeah. Plus, they have the those other ones that fly like airplanes.
Yeah, the Ospreys. The
Ospreys. Yeah. Because the picture I was looking at was an Osprey landing in Puerto Rico in a football stadium, unloading emergency relief aid.
Yeah, I heard somewhere that, among other things, the hospitals in Puerto Rico are just devastated. I'm trying to find the right word. And you know, that's why the Pitbull guy sent his plane down to get people, cancer patients out who needed chemo.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was just, you know, you got to administer that stuff pretty carefully, right?
Oh yeah. I mean, I've worked on some hospitals and worked on emergency generators on hospitals also. So those run on diesel down there. Most of the ones around here run on gas, if they have it.
Yeah.
Because I know the two in Reading, the one I worked in Reading has a humongous emergency generator. It has an exerciser on it, they call it. It runs like once a week or something like that. You set it and you forget it, and the generator just automatically starts once, whatever time you set it for.
Yeah, just to make sure that it stays in running order.
Yeah.
Yeah, diesel is more readily available in the wider world, though, because it, of course, is not nearly as refined as gasoline, so that kind of makes sense, too.
Yeah, we did a building once, and it was the Shasta County Administration Building. They had an emergency generator on it. It's a county building, you know, and they have to try to stay running if there's a power outage. When we did the guy came to do the load bank test on it. What's a load bank is test is he runs it and it's not hooked to the building, but he has this big old trailer and it full of these resistance banks, and he puts a big massive load on the generator. Check it out. Well, my boss had to pay for the diesel, and he didn't buy enough diesel for the guy to do the test. It was a little bit embarrassing.
Oh, just a little bit. Yeah, so Trump said that generators were being taken in. It's not a tiny little island. It's not little Barbuda or little Dominica. It's what? Okay, the biggest island's Cuba, the next one's Hispaniola. Probably Puerto Rico bigger than Jamaica or vice versa. I don't know. But it's pathetic. It's pathetic that we haven't that it's taken this long, that somebody had to look at Trump and say, you know, you got to do something here. You can't just ignore him. Yeah, well, they're broke. They owe a lot of money to Wall Street. Fuck them. I mean, you can hear him saying it, can't you?
Oh, yeah, but I can look at the infrastructure because I know infrastructure, too. But, you know, I've worked on sewer treatment plants, on water treatment plants. And if they don't have the electricity to run those plants, I mean, you can run a water treatment plant on a backup diesel generator, which one of them I built and did have, but you can't run for very long.
No.
And a sewer plant, I mean, sewer plants have to run basically 24 hours a day to keep up with the amount of sewer that they have to process.
And you know how one of the best ways to visualize that is a couple of months back, I remember reading a story, maybe Sandra shared it with me. The Israelis are, of course, in control of all the electricity that goes into the occupied territories, including Gaza. And so they shut down the electricity to Gaza, and the next thing you know, they had shit washing up on Israeli beaches because they kind of forgot that when they cut the power off, they were cutting the power off to the sewage plant.
And they had to dump the sewage in the ocean.
Well, it was in the ocean, and it was coming up on the beach, right?
Well, if they can't process it, they got to get rid of it.
Right. If you can't process it, just into the ocean it goes.
So that's probably what's happening in Puerto Rico right now, too. I mean, they probably have all the stuff just flowing straight out of the sewer treatment plant into the ocean because they can't process it. So then, I mean, the disease will start here pretty soon, don't you think?
Well, if it hasn't already, and we're talking about nasty stuff. We're talking about cholera. You know, who knows, typhus. Things grow fast in tropical climes. More so,
I don't know if they
do in yeah.
I don't know if they have mosquitoes in Puerto Rico, but
they have mosquitoes in Puerto Rico. They got mosquitoes.
Well, you've been there, haven't you?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You went there on the lib boat.
And what's more, you know, there's that little island that the Navy used to bomb the bejesus out of, that Bobby Kennedy Jr. got arrested for protesting, Vieques, and it's kind of a tourist destination now. And it's, I saw an article earlier today, Sparky, that said Vieques is 70 miles from Puerto Rico, and it might as well be 7,000.
Yeah, the people on that island are just fucked.
Yeah. And you know, at this point in time, because we've let them be fucked. But anyway, we got to get out of here. Thanks for the update, Sparky. I do appreciate it. Good hearing from you, man.
Okay.
All right. Take it easy.
Back to the football game.
All right. Go Pack. Later.
Packers up 14-0.
Oh, cool. See ya. And you know what? If I could, I'd watch NFL right now. Well, sort of. Just to disprove Donnie Dumbass. Oh, their ratings are terrible. He's still, yeah, like I said, he's still jealous from getting spanked in the USFL. So we're overtime and time to get out of here. Thanks, everybody, for joining in and participating in whatever way you so chose to do. Thanks to everybody who supports the program. Thank you so very kindly for getting us started this evening, Asa. And thank you to everyone who followed on that. Thank you very, very much. Thanks to the overnight subscription crew. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you to Sparky and Steve in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, John Fox. Thank you, Ben Birch. Thank you to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, Coal River Mountain Watch on Twitter, or on Facebook, and at Coal River MTN on Twitter. There, I've got it now. Yeah. Then, of course, always, Gina, it's all for you. And one last note. Check out Vice News. Meet the activist who uses drone to monitor coal companies. That's Junior Walk. He's part of Coal River Mountain Watch. He's one of those hardest working, bravest people I know that I talk about every night. Might find it interesting. He uses a drone to show people what's still being done, what isn't over, no matter what the lawyers or the people who say that there are voices say, it ain't over. And Junior Walk can prove it. ViceNews.com or news.vice.com. Anyway, later, y'all. Bye.